Okay, so this is Akayla doing Dr. Vereen Bell's interview for Mr. August Johnson's book. So the first question says to please state your name and the year in which you were born.
Vereen Bell, 1934.
How did you come to work at Vanderbilt, and how long have you, or did you work here, and what has been your position?
I came here in 1961 after having taught at LSU for 2 years, which were 2 years of the very worst parts of the violent parts of the civil rights movement and agitation, particularly in Louisiana. Really horrible time then. Because not only had the desegregation orders been put into effect, but now they were requiring the busing orders to be put into effect in Louisiana, well, everywhere actually. But Louisiana was one of the states that didn't come up with a plan. And because they had not come up with a plan, they did not come up with a plan sort of in the same way that the Tea Party doesn't want to come up with a plan for anything here. They just want to obstruct everything. And because they had not come up with a plan for distributing these desegregated schools around, it was just total chaos. And they were going to close the schools down, in fact, keep them from being desegregated. And that was sort of the atmosphere down there. It's extremely violent. And I could have stayed there and done my part for the cause, but I didn't want to. And so I looked around for another place to come, and I came to Vanderbilt, which was, you know, liberal heaven compared to Baton Rouge. Though it's just sort of basically a small southern city in itself. Much, much, much sleepier place than it is now. Maybe 3 restaurants that you had the option of going to if you wanted to go out. One of them was at Smyrna. But I came as an assistant professor, and taught a couple of different things in the English department. Fiction courses, mostly, novel courses. I taught for 4 or 5 years after that, I think I was given tenure. And I was tenured and then a full professor, so 15 years after that. And at the time, we would out, though, his August connection. When I first came here, the only office building the English department had was this building. Hey, Peter.
Hey, how's it going?
Y'all had good lunch. You being recorded, by the way, y'all had good supper.
Okay, well, let me say something meaningful. You didn't know what I had for breakfast this morning?
Sure.
Yeah, no, it was great. We had the room all to ourselves, which I must have been because of you, you know.
Yeah.
So, you're feeling better.
When's Alexandra going?
A week from today.
Okay.
A week from tomorrow.
I want to see her before then, but I know that's hard, but I'll talk to you.
Okay, good. All right, I'm going off the record now, okay?
Okay. When I came here, the only office building that this office space in this department had was the building that is attached to this one, which is called Old Central on the other side of the bridge. These are 2 separate buildings, and when they renovated this building, put that bridge across to connect the two. But there was just that freestanding building, which had been an old farmhouse, been the farmhouse for this, when all of this between West End and the other side of Peabody campus was a farm. But there's an old-fashioned English department, of course, and very conservative, most of the people were very conservative. And we're not. to put it mildly, not unracist. They had very strong attitudes toward race. And the kind of white Southern people that weren't even all Southern, but most of them were kind of white Southern people who thought that the things just should not change. I mean, it's a weird way to think about things now. But it was like change itself was a bad thing. That the South was a sort of bastion of not change. And it's being a bastion of not change meant that black people all had to stay where they were and be doing the things that they're doing. And not show off your television programs, by the way, that had white people. I mean, it's really awful. But it was, I mean, at least the advantage of that, to me, was it a little more abstract than Baton Rouge had been. And we were in that, we were in Old Central for, I mean, I was in Old Central. When I came, I was at Old Central, and then we had to, some of us had to move over. Of course, we expanded. Some of us had to move over to whatever that dormitory is, catty corner from the back of Surratt. And then we had to get the whole department there. We finally got the whole department together. It was in Vanderbilt Hall. What was that, Vanderbilt Hall? I guess it's still called Vanderbilt Hall. In the basement of the first floor is still a dormitory. And that's where August was. He was working as a custodian for that, I think for that whole building, maybe for both the buildings, I think, maybe just one. Both for the undergraduate students who were there and for us. Where we met and became friends.
Why do you teach the subject that you teach?
Why do I teach the subject that I teach? Because I like the material that I'm teaching.
What?
That sounds like a question from Ephoma. Why are you teaching white people stuff?
What have you enjoyed most about working at Vanderbilt, and what has your time here taught you?
What I have liked most about working at Vanderbilt is freedom and the flexibility that it gives me, and flexibility in the courses that I can offer, undergraduate courses I can offer. I have a very poor attention span, so I've always wanted to teach something different. So I like that. And that's been the case ever since I've been here. But I've just always liked the students, and I've always had I always felt that they were. They and I were somehow, most of them, they and I were compatible, and that was fun and pleasurable. And that was even more true once there were black students here. When that first group of black students came in, it did start with Perry Wallace, but before that, running all through the time that Perry was at school here.
What do you like to do in your free time?
Read, stare out the window, and go fishing somewhere.
How long and in what capacity have you been acquainted with Mr. August Johnson?
Well, the answer to that implicit in what I said about moving to Vanderbilt Hall, I don't know when that was, but it must have been around 1967 or 8 when we moved over there.
How did you and Mr. Johnson become acquainted, and how did your friendship develop, and how do you feel as though it has lasted?
How do I feel what?
Why and how do you feel your friendship has lasted?
I don't know. I mean, August had always liked to have conversations with people. He's a big talker, or Wallace used to be. If he had access to you, if he had some sort of connection to you through a mutual interest in sports, say, baseball or football, then he'd be out there in the hall, Clayton hallway, but basically waiting for you to have some free time so he could come in and talk about World Series or whatever, or what it is that the Yankees were doing, with a trade or you know, some sort of sports-oriented thing. And that was sort of his thing. I mean, he's the one that initiates relationships like that, I think, and I'm sure that happened with Roy, too. It's not like we singled out him. He just liked having somebody to talk to when he was at work. And I think that's sort of what he thought work was. I mean, coming over here, having these conversations. And so we did. And one thing led to another. He became a lot more personal about his telling about his life. I think he wanted people to know about that, what his life had been like. So we did that a lot. And that's sort of where that went. I mean, that's where it went along. I mean, he became a friend at work, is what it about it, too. Got to get some sleep, girl.
What specific memories come to mind when you think of your first encounters with Mr. Johnson?
I don't remember my first encounter with him.
So do you remember, like, in general, like, initial encounters? Or, like, when you think about, like, the ways that your friendship came to develop, like, the initial types of interactions.
Well, those were the kinds of interactions. I mean, that's basically what it is about it took a long time. Not just me seeing each other at work and hanging out, talking about stuff. And, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, whatever it is that was going on in the world, talking about politics. And then his politics. I don't know this for sure, but since his and my politics sort of a lot coincide with each other, I mean, he and I have the same sort of political attitude. I think I was probably the person he liked to talk to a lot about politics, and we did talk a lot about politics, but about race, specifically. Mm-hmm. And that when he was with Roy, he talked about sports and about baseball and stuff. I'm not sure about that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that when he and I were together, it was really very strong. Serious conversations, and he told a lot about how he was, what it is that he's growing up had been like, in racial terms.
So what do you think?
And you could draw that out of him, it's very strong. I mean, I don't know how much you know about that, but it's on a hair raiser. And his boys don't even really believe it. It's, oh, Dad, you know, now, those days are gone. No, no, they're not.
Mm-hmm. So what, in terms of racial relations or like his experiences with race, what do you think, what do you think you learned from him?
Is that horrible? And how institutionalized racism was, and what sort of subtle forms it took. He will tell you, if he doesn't tell you, I don't want you to put this on the record, but he will tell you if I can draw the story out of him about a sort of love of his life story.
Mm-hmm.
When he was in college. There's a woman here that he went out with. They were very compatible, and she was from a wealthy middle-class family here in town. And she's fair-skinned. And because of that, she never did bother him. But she was always, I mean, he was always anxious when they went downtown to go to the show. That she was going to be taken for a white woman. And then somebody was going to say something, some white person, redneck person or not redneck person, would say something to him about him going out with a white woman. And I think it was probably he that broke that off partly because of that, but that's something you have to talk to him about. But that's kind of race, that's kind of racist thing that I would not have ever thought about before. And he's been very sad about it for a long time.
So do you think he give you a new perspective on racism in the South, or Nashville specifically?
Yeah, I mean, part of my way of things like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. He never complains about anything. And I don't mean to come in and say, you know, you can't believe what the talking motherfucker said to me this morning or whatever. You know, but he, his attitude toward it has always been stoical. It's sort of the way things are, and you just have to learn to deal with it. So he's never been, you know, proactive or reactive in any particular way. Just sort of keeps his head low. But he's very, very, very smart, thoughtful person about both race and politics.
Hmm.
And he's very friendly with people. He's a very friendly, gregarious person, and I think he cherishes his friends that he's made over here. I mean, not just being Roy, but all the other people in the department that he's been friends with at one level or another.
Yeah.
this one thing, I would not go with the book either, but there was a... There was a guy in our department who got picked up in a sting operation for having solicited young boy prostitutes, and he got arrested for that. That guy, and apparently had been in the habit of picking up young male prostitutes, taking them home or whatever to them. Well, that news broke, all of us just could not believe it. And it was, he was really upset. First thing that happened to me when I came to work, always would come to the door. And I read about blah, blah, and I said, yeah. And he said, I can't believe it. Well, he's such a nice guy. I said, he talked about baseball. He knows a lot about baseball. And we had a good time talking about baseball. As if somehow or another, because he was talking to me about baseball, he wasn't doing all this other stuff too. Somehow or another, if somebody knew something about baseball, like to talk about it. You and I existed in a special zone. Mm-hmm. I felt worse for August and all of that than I did for anybody else. I'd probably be fun, but I didn't know that.
We kind of already talked about this at the beginning, but can you describe, in case you want to add anything, can you describe the overall environment on Vanderbilt's campus when you and Mr. Johnson began developing your friendship, and how does that environment compare to now?
How is it what now?
How does it compare to now?
Oh, Jesus. it's different. I mean, there were practically just nothing but white people on campus. I think the first black undergraduate who graduated must have been 19. You know this, but not you probably know. I remember debating the desegregation of the campus in 1963, as late as 1963, in the faculty meeting. So that would have met whoever it is that entered that year. It must have been 63 or 64, so that means that she would have graduated in 1968. So until 1968, there were no black undergraduates at all. And then there were smaller and smaller groups of them. And that's right that Perry Wallace and Walter Burry and that sort of posse of guys were here. The campus was, it's almost such a cliche that hardly worth recording. Campus was white and conservative and mostly Southern. And that's one of the ways in which it's different. One of the ways in which it's different now, and that is that it is not. It may still be a Southern campus, I thought of as being a Southern campus, but it's not primarily a Southern undergraduate student body. I mean, maybe when you come here, you sort of become, it's like a virus. Southernness is a white, Southernness is a kind of virus you catch if you come on the Vanderbilt campus, but there's not many white, there's not many. Between, say, 1965 and 1975, or 76, 77, sort of where the 60s were getting over, it was almost all white Southern students. And there was an effort to recruit people from outside the South, but not many students outside the South came. A long time. And that's one of the different, one of the big differences. And that sort of controlled the atmosphere. So it made it, you know, more likely to promote a kind of homogeneity and similarity among people. There are a few women faculty, non-existent women faculty. Of course, no black faculty at all to speak of. That was way, way later that that happened. So.
Did you have to break down racial barriers in your friendship with Mr. Johnson?
No.
How do you think others perceived your friendship?
I don't know. I mean, if anybody had worried about it, I would have thought that it was not me because it's a race. Anybody who thought it was strange, it would not have been because it was a racial barrier as much as it was a class barrier or class difference. If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all the way I know how to say it. I mean, most people think it's fine and would find it perfectly acceptable for a person of my age and station in life to have friendship most people talk progressive liberal people that I know that we're talking about, with a black man of my own age, and what would have worried them, what would have made them wonder was why it is that I, who am this sort of semi-distinguished English teacher, I don't know, would be friends, close friends with somebody who was basically cleaning out the building. Yeah. Don't know. I mean, that's in their terms, not mine. Mm-hmm.
Do or did you, Mr. Johnson, have interactions outside the professional context? And if so, in what regard?
Oh yeah, we went to baseball games together, sales games together. And twice we went, Roy in August and I went down to, the first time we gave him this trip, went down to Tampa to see the Yankees play in spring training game in Tampa. And stayed and just sort of hung out there for a long weekend both times. And those were our main adventures outside of town. Otherwise, it's just either the two of us or three of us, or sometimes maybe one of his boys went with us going to ball games together. It's about what the outside of workplace friendship was.
What interests and passions do you share with Mr. Johnson?
Well, sports. I mean, that's one of the things that bound us together, the interest in sports. Interest in social justice, which he has a deep, 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 deep immersion in. It doesn't always come out.
What characteristics might you use to describe Mr. Johnson and why?
What?
What characteristics might you use to describe Mr. Johnson and why?
Why would I use them to describe him?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's one of the few people that I've known who has actually sort of almost literally organized his life around work and being a responsible worker. And I don't mean that to sound condescending at all. It's not like I'm saying, oh, he's so good because he's a hard worker. He actually, if he didn't have his work, he would not have anything. And I think this is partly been a result of his always wanting to be responsible to his children and being able to be a good father and raising them and having a good family. But I also think it's because he's had so many different tragic things happen to him in his life that this is what it is that he gives purpose to his life with. And I don't mean just showing up here for work. As you know, I guess, I don't know whether you know this or not, but he has a lawn service business that he doesn't do it anymore. I think the boys may do it. But he'd get off here at 3:30 and then go out and start mowing people's lawns till 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it was a way that he could make some money, but also just a way that he could. Still think of himself as a purposeful person, and he is extremely serious and a deep thinker, and loyal to his friends and to his friendships. And good with people, I mean, gregarious with people. You know, all these, I mean, I don't know whether he's an exception to this rule or not, but one of the things you need to, whatever you do, you put in this book, one of the things you need to remember is that, hey.
I'm gonna look at it.
Okay. One of the things you really need to remember is that all of these people in the Vegas department are white people and black people that are friends of August that show up every time there's some sort of ceremony for August are all people that he went out of his way to make friends with. That's what I may have described it to.
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I pulled out again, they're 90% white people.
Right.
We're talking about.
Right. Tell me about your fondest memories of or with Mr. Johnson over the years.
Well, I mean, the most fun were the ones when we went out to Tampa. And, he didn't like it down there because he didn't like the trees. He said, "What the heck? They're all palm trees and orange tree, orange groves and stuff. Where are those trees down there?" So. And also, we went to a seafood restaurant one night where he either saw or, you know, I'm sure he did eat, saw his first raw oysters. Served and thought it was just awful looking thing to that stomach. A lot of people would want to do that. And he'll have to tell you more about that. I can go on about that. We're here for his interview. But the fondest, I guess it's a fond memory, I don't know whether you call it fond or not, but when we lived over in when the English department was over in Vanderbilt Hall, the Vanderbilt Hall was not air conditioned, centrally air conditioned, so all the officers had individual air conditioning units sticking out of the window of the back. And in this particular year, the second or third floors where the English department were occupied by freshman males who, being freshmen and being males, tended to go out and get drunk a lot. And even though it wasn't as easy to go out and get, well, it was easy to go out and get drunk a lot then, because you didn't have the 21-year age limit. You could drink all you wanted if you were 18 or so. And they were away from home for the first time, and therefore, so sowing their wild oats. And one night I came into my office, one morning I came into my office and there was dried up vomit on my window, and that it hit my air conditioner and bounced up onto the window, and so there was a little pile of vomit, a little dried up vomit on the air conditioner, and pile and dried up vomit on the window. And August came in and saw it, and he said, "Don't worry about it." He's always telling people, "Don't worry about it. Don't worry about Bill. Don't worry about God. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it." He was gonna go out there and wash this student's vomit off my window. And I said, "You're not." He said, "Yeah, it's my job to do it. That's what I'm paid to do. That's what I'm gonna come over here and do." And so he was prepared to do it, and I was prepared to not let him do it. And so I told people, the RA upstairs, that he needed to find out whoever it was that vomited on my window and could come down and clean it off. And the RA said he did not think it was the student's responsibility to clean his own vomit off. And I said, "Well, this went on and on and on." And meanwhile, for about 2 weeks, that dried up vomit was still staying there, because we had this complete stalemate. And then eventually, because they wouldn't do it, the RA would not do it, would not make students do it. And August would do it, but I didn't want him to do it. And I kept insisting that I would get out there and kick the ladder out from under him if he did get up there and do it. But one day, eventually, it just disappeared. I don't know who cleaned it off, but it was August that went out there and did it. Mm-hmm. Sneaked out there and did it when he knew that I was not going to be there to see him do it. Mm-hmm. He used to have a Sunday afternoon football game too. Touch football game down all off of West End Avenue, West End Junior High, I think it was. He used to play football with us a lot. Till he cut his wrist really badly. Mm-hmm. It almost bled out. It was so bad, it almost didn't repair his arm. He put his hand through a glass window down in the restroom. Mm-hmm. And his hand, you'll notice when you see him, his hand doesn't quite work anymore.
What's a particularly funny story that you remember involving Mr. Johnson?
Well, I think the one with the vomit on the window is sort of funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, of course, if you don't like vomit stories. I don't know. Let me think about that. I can come back to that. Yeah.
Okay, well, I have a note here.
Oh, I do know a funny story. Yes, I can tell you a funny story. He's always talking about being in a Negro's League. He's always proud about being in a Negro's League. We talked a lot about that. I've heard about the history of that organization for a long time. Lot. I mean, I learned a lot of detail about it. Just interested to see how it worked. They all got sort of recruited the day before a game, drive down to Birmingham on the bus, play a game, etc. when we were going, one of those trips that we took to Tampa, I had got our tickets so that we were all on the end, on the aisles, and I just kind of sit it together. And before the plane took off, I took my little pre-takeoff nap. And when I woke up, the plane was in the air and stuff, and I looked over, and August was sitting by a young woman, a white woman, and they were just, and she was turning around and looking at him, just total fascination. And you could just see his arms waving and stuff, and going on and being carried on. And he turned out, and we have joked with him about this before, but I mean, the joke is he sat down and turned to her and said, "Hi, my name is August Johnson, and I used to play in the Negro Leagues." But somehow or another, it didn't happen that way, but it did come out that he had been in the Negro Leagues, and this woman, young woman, had had some connection to the history of the Negro Leagues through her father. So he was just on top of this, and they just gabbered away the whole time. It was just hilarious. So, I mean, I was sitting over there in my introverted place, Roy sitting over there in his introverted place, and there was August. And two or three different times when we were in Tampa this time and the time after that, Roy and I would facetiously go. I mean, something would go into a restaurant and have a woman would say, have a table for three, and one of the others say, yeah, table for three. And, "Hi, my name is Vereen Bell. I used to play in the Negro Leagues." And I always thought that was just hilarious. He said, "No, they don't believe you." Well, I know they don't believe you.
There was, Dr. Gottfried said to tell you to tell the story about the seatbelt on the airplane to Florida.
Well, that was how it is that started, that conversation. You didn't know how to get a seatbelt started.
Ah, okay.
And the young woman helped him get his seatbelt.
Got it, okay. Yeah. Okay, got it. What do you believe that your time at Vanderbilt may... How do you believe your time at Vanderbilt may have been different without Mr. Johnson's employment?
Well, I mean, it'd be different the same way anyway. The absence of any close friends would be different. I don't know specifically. I think I've known a lot of staff people that I would not have otherwise known on campus that were friends of August. And I like being around. Respect and his connectivity in that way is again evident and with it. But that kind of social outreach, I mean, he doesn't mean for it to be that way, but what the fact of it is.
What do you know about Mr. Johnson's family? Have you met or interacted at any point? And if so, in what ways have you interacted and what are they like?
I don't know much about the family. I know a lot about, but I don't know much of his boys, because what he calls his boys, who are probably 40 years old, because they come over and help him on campus. And were involved in him and still involved in that lawn care enterprise. And I know his sister slightly, but that's mostly because of having been around her a couple of times when he was sick and needed to be taken care of, and she and I happened to be in the same space. Now that he will tell you about his family, I know a lot about his family that he has told me, but that's a different question. I don't know.
Yeah. Did you attend Mr. Johnson's retirement function? If so, what was that like for you, and how did it make you feel?
Which retirement? There have been about five of them.
The one that was at the gym.
At the rec center?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
God, it was the most boring damn thing I've ever been in my life. It was horrible.
What did
but
you
it
think?
It turns out it wasn't just a retirement ceremony. It was a meeting of the. It was supposed to be an annual tribute to the staff, what I call the staff. And people all came out and made a sort of free lunch spread and stuff. And there were two or three people who retired or receiving service awards. And there was so-and-so was a 10-year service award. There'd be about 30 people. And then the 30 people come up and get that 10-year award. And then so-and-so, 25-year service award. That many people come up and get that 25-year service award. It just went on and on and on. Meanwhile, August is sitting down there with his family in the wheelchair, right at the center of the stage, supposed to be the honoree. And by the time they got around to honoring August, everybody was just bored shitless from having to see all these people parade back and forth the stage that they didn't come there to see. So, and then David Jones came out and gave a long rambling speech about Vanderbilt athletic program. And it was horrible, but it was nice to see him, and he liked it.
He was
very moved by it. I mean, everybody else was pissed off by it, but he was very moved.
What did you think about so you said that there were a bunch of different functions. What did you think about the other ones?
Well, the other ones I'm thinking about. Well, I get the service award ceremonies and the retirement ceremonies all mixed up, because I've been several of them. But the one in the English department was with the history department people, and with the English department people was very nice and close and warm and gave him a chance to talk, which he likes to do. He just talks and talks and talks.
Do you think that the English department has fostered pleasant environment for Mr. Johnson throughout this time here?
Yeah. But again, it's as much because of him as it is other people.
Mm-hmm. Right. I know you have a student waiting. Let's see. What is something that you might want to tell Mr. Johnson that you never have?
If I had something like that, I would tell you.
That's fair. That's fair. Let's see if there's... Oh, the one that you didn't... I asked, what admirable qualities do you feel Mr. Johnson has brought to the Vanderbilt community over the years? What's coming back to that one?
Well, he has just been a real connector of people. Clients, people of different levels in the department, within the department, and the staff people in the department, and the graduate students in the department, and the newest faculty in the department, and the oldest faculty in the department. He's been the one that sort of threads everybody together, and everybody has a kind of common affection for him. But he does for them too, and he's, that's what good people do.
How do you, or do you think your relationship has been different since he's retired?
Well, I just don't like his not being over here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to try, he and I both have to need to find some way to get together more.
I think...
Saves me a lot of time, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would estimate it saves me about 10 hours a week of talking bullshit.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to add about Mr. Johnson's character or his contributions to Vanderbilt or y'all's relationship?
No.
Well... That is it.
Okay.
Quick and easy. Let's see.
Well, let me know if I can help getting you over here.
Okay.